Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Warring parties in Yemen are urged to renew their historic truce, which has largely held for nearly 4 months, the UN Special Envoy for the country, Hans Grundberg, said on Thursday. The truce will expire on 2nd August, and the government and Houthi rebels must rise to the occasion and not miss this opportunity, he said. The special envoy has intensified his engagement towards expanding and extending the agreement, which was first announced in April, initially for just 2 months. It was extended in June for an additional 2 months, marking the longest period of relative calm in more than 7 years of war in Yemen, with a significant decrease in civilian casualties. Mr. Grundberg said despite shortcomings in implementation, the truce has been transformational for the country. An extended and expanded truce will increase the benefits to the Yemeni people, he said, adding that ultimately the aim is to move toward a political settlement that comprehensively ends the conflict. More than 14,000 cases of monkeypox have now been reported across 71 countries, the head of the World Health Organization, WHO, said on Thursday in remarks to an expert group that is monitoring the evolution of the outbreak. WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said, while there has been an apparent declining trend in some countries, others are still seeing an increase, with 6 countries reporting their first cases last week. The vast majority of monkeypox cases continue to be reported among men who have sex with men. Tedros said this represents both an opportunity for targeted public health interventions, but also presents challenges because of life-threatening discrimination in some countries. He warned of the very real concern that men who have sex with men could be stigmatized or blamed for the outbreak, thus making it much harder to track and stop infections. In more health news, WHO has welcomed historic funding to expand the rollout of the world's first malaria vaccine in Africa. Countries on the continent can apply for funding from Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, which has allocated $160 million over the next 3 years to support increased access to the life-saving RTSS vaccine. WHO said malaria remains a primary cause of childhood illness and death in sub-Saharan Africa. In 2020, nearly 500,000 boys and girls died from the disease, or one child every minute. The vaccine was first introduced 3 years ago in a pilot program in 3 countries, Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. So far, roughly 1.3 million children have been inoculated. Deanne Penn, UN News.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
After State Church updates, we debut a song from Godless Gospel.
Then U.S. World Triathlon Champion Don Ardell tells us about his new book,
Freedom from Religion in 30 Days, a real wellness approach to critical thinking, exuberance, and personal freedoms.
That'll be coming up in the following Democracy Now! Headlines today.
The White House has announced President Biden has COVID-19 and will work from isolation. Biden confirmed the news in a short video posted on Twitter Thursday.
Hey, folks, guess you heard. This morning I tested positive for COVID. But I've been double vaccinated, double boosted. Symptoms are mild. And I really appreciate your inquiry and your concerns. But I'm doing well, getting a lot of work done.
Biden said he immediately began taking Paxlovid, the antiviral medication produced by Pfizer that significantly cuts the risk of hospitalization and death in COVID patients. The White House said it's carrying out contact tracing to warn Biden's close contacts they're at risk of COVID-19, but declined to say how many people might be impacted. Over the last week, Biden's traded handshakes with senior Israeli officials in Jerusalem, fist-bumped Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and traveled to Massachusetts to promote clean energy with Senator Warren and John Kerry. Throughout those public appearances and others in recent months, Biden has consistently declined to wear a mask. On Thursday, COVID response coordinator Dr. Ashish Jha defended the White House's safety protocols.
We always said that this was a possibility. I think I even said it from this stage that this was a possibility. And I think that that the protocols have kept him from getting infected, but we knew that this was a possibility with this incredibly contagious variant.
Biden will turn 80 shortly after November's midterm elections. Even in young and fully vaccinated people, COVID-19 can cause long-term effects that are still poorly understood, including neurological and mental health problems, cardiac damage, inflammation, and fatigue. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris, second in line to the presidency, plans to maintain her schedule this week, even though she's considered a close contact of Biden's. This all comes amidst another wave of COVID-19 cases driven by the BA.5 Omicron variant, with about 3,000 U.S. residents dying of the disease each week. The House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack held primetime hearing Thursday night focused on Donald Trump's refusal to take action as his supporters attacked the Capitol. Lawmakers focused on the three-hour period on January 6th after Trump urged his supporters to march to the Capitol and fight like hell. He knew many were armed. They also played previously unseen outtakes of a speech Trump delivered on January 7th when the president repeatedly refused to read prepared lines declaring that the 2020 election was over.
The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defied the seat of justice. It's defiled, right? See, I can't see it very well. Okay, I'll do this. I'm going to do this. Let's go. But this election is now over. Congress has certified the results. I don't want to say the election's over. I just want to say Congress has certified the results without saying the election's over, okay?
After headlines, we'll spend the rest of the hour airing excerpts from Thursday evening's hearing of the January 6th committee. A government watchdog has opened a criminal investigation into the Secret Service's destruction of text messages sent around the time of the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. In announcing its probe, the Office of the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security noted the messages were deleted after officials requested them in order to aid the House January 6 committee's investigation, after the officials requested they be preserved. The House of Representatives has approved a bill that would safeguard the right to contraception under federal law. Just 8 Republicans joined Democrats Thursday as lawmakers approved the Right to Contraception Act on a vote of 228-195. Ahead of the vote, California Democrat Doris Matsui cited the Supreme Court's ruling in June overturning a half century of reproductive rights.
The Supreme Court's decision was a direct attack on abortion, and Americans are now justifiably scared about the future of birth control. Republicans across this country will continue their extreme assault on basic freedoms. And Justice Thomas made it clear that the Supreme Court will do nothing to protect our fundamental rights from these coordinated attacks. I refuse to sit back and watch as Republicans regress our nation to a place where my granddaughter has fewer rights than her mother or I did.
A New York State man has been diagnosed with polio, the first case of the virus in the United States in nearly a decade. The man was not vaccinated against the polio virus. The U.S. was declared polio-free in 1979, but global efforts to combat the disease have failed to entirely stamp out reservoirs of the virus, which can cause paralysis. Turkey's government says negotiators from Moscow and Kyiv have agreed to a deal that would allow Ukraine to safely export millions of tons of grain through besieged ports along the Black Sea. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres traveled to Istanbul on Thursday as news spread of an emerging deal that could help alleviate a global food crisis that's led to soaring costs of staples like flour and cooking oil. The rare victory for diplomacy in Ukraine comes 5 months after Russia's invasion. In Europe, the death toll from an unprecedented heat wave has topped 2,000 as forecasters warn dangerous levels of heat are spreading east. In Greece, firefighters have responded to nearly 400 wildfires this week, while temperatures in parts of Poland approached 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Here in the United States, forecasters are predicting this week's dangerously hot weather will continue into the weekend, with 85% of residents set to experience highs of 90 degrees or hotter. Dramatic new satellite images from NASA show the largest reservoir in the U.S., Lake Mead, is at its lowest level since the completion of the Hoover Dam in the 1930s. The reservoir serves about 25 million people. In Sri Lanka, Ranil Wickremesinghe has been sworn in as the island nation's new president, filling the gap left by the previous president, who was forced to resign after months of mass protest. Overnight, Sri Lankan soldiers raided the presidential secretariat in the capital, Colombo, where demonstrators have been staging a massive sit-in protest. They also assaulted an adjacent protest encampment in a raid that left at least 10 people badly injured. Italy's Prime Minister Mario Draghi resigned on Thursday following the collapse of his unity government. He'll remain prime minister in a caretaker role until new national elections scheduled for September 25th. Draghi's resignation was welcomed by Italy's right wing. Recent polls show coalition led by the Italian far right would win a parliamentary majority if the election were held today. The Biden administration has cleared another prisoner for release from the U.S. military prison at Guantanamo Bay. The United States has imprisoned Khaled Hamid Qasim of Yemen at Guantanamo since May of 2002 without charge or trial. The human rights group Reprieve says he was severely tortured, forced to sleep, standing up, subjected to freezing temperatures, left shackled and unable to walk for long stretches. The United States continues to imprison 37 people at Guantanamo. 20 of those remaining have been recommended for transfer. In Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, at least 18 people have been killed in a raid by hundreds of heavily armed police officers on the Alemão favela. Witnesses say masked officers backed by armored vehicles and helicopters sprayed bullets over a wide area for 12 hours Thursday, killing at least one innocent bystander, leaving injured people unattended in the streets. It's the latest in a series of deadly raids in Rio's impoverished communities, which police say are meant to target organized crime groups. Rio's public defender said there were signs of major human rights violations. This is human rights worker Gilberto Santiago Lopez.
The police aren't aiding injured people. They aren't. Those injured had to be wheeled in a hand truck, and then residents had to halt a car to take them to the hospital. The rationale is that they are criminals and they don't deserve the aid they need. People are being dehumanized.
Back in the U.S., a federal judge has sentenced former Minneapolis police officer Thomas Lane to 30 months in prison for violating George Floyd's civil rights. In May of 2020, Lane was filmed holding George Floyd's legs as former officer Derek Chauvin pinned his knees to Floyd's neck for over 9 minutes, killing him. Lane is set to be sentenced on separate manslaughter charges in a Minnesota court in September. And Senate Democrats have introduced a bill that would end the federal prohibition of cannabis, also known as marijuana. On Thursday, Senators Cory Booker and Ron Wyden introduced the Cannabis Administration and Opportunity Act. They were joined by Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
I am proud to be the first majority leader ever to say that it is time to end the federal prohibition on cannabis. And this bill provides the best framework for updating our cannabis laws and reversing decades of harm inflicted by the war on drugs.
The legislation would delist cannabis as a prohibited drug, impose a federal tax on its sale, and would see the criminal records of many nonviolent offenders expunged. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And coming up tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., Classic AM Underground Radio.
Hi, listeners. This is Carl G. from the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas. Every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m., we'll talk about prisons since the Fugitive Slave Act to the Attica Uprising to 2018 prison strike. Stay tuned for more information on strikes and rebellions wherever they occur. Only on the Abolitionist Hour on Radio Free Kansas. Every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. See you there.
Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Prethought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. There is no hell below us, as the song says, but we know that many people around the world are in sizzling conditions right now and hope wherever you are, you're able to find some relief.
And I'm Dan Barker, co-host of Prethought Radio. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This is the July 21st, 2022 episode of Prethought Radio, and Grant Blaschke with Audio for the Arts is our engineer. The show is produced in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Prethought Hall. Prethought Hall is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
That's right. And actually, we learned belatedly that it's Stephen Uhl, U-H-L. We've been saying it wrong all these years.
And did I say it right this time?
You said it wrong this time.
Okay.
But
Stephen Uhl, U-H-L.
That's right. And he died 2 years ago. And then his wife, Diane, died this year. And we missed them so much. And they were such wonderful benefactors of free thought. Prethought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which works to keep religion out of government and out of social policy, and we have an uphill battle right now with that, especially in the courts, and it also works to educate you, the public, about the views of non-believers, and we are 3 in 10 adult Americans today in the United States. Almost 30% of the population is unaffiliated with religion. Our members tend to be call themselves atheists, agnostics, freethinkers, skeptics, humanists. And if you're interested in more information, please contact us through our website and ask for info or join us at fffrf.org.
Are religious people healthier than non-religious people? Is there a connection between non-religion and health? Our guest in the second half of today's show will be Don Ardell, a U.S. and world triathlon and duathlon champion, who will tell us about his new book, Freedom From Religion in 30 Days, A Real Wellness Approach to Critical Thinking, Exuberance, and Personal Freedoms. By the way, Don Ardell turned 84 years old this week.
And as you'll see, he's also very exuberant, just like the subtitle of his book. Speaking of birthdays, there are none for freethinking composers this week. So the music between segments today will be some of Dan playing piano, including All the Things You Are by Jerome Kern, Gospel Piano by Dan, Honeysuckle Rose by Fats Waller, and Buzz Boogie by Dan Barker. Was that written for Buzz Kemper, our audio announcer?
Well, it was supposed to be a generic boogie that I played, but then Buzz was the engineer, so I named it Buzz Boogie in his honor.
Alliterative.
So, yeah. Regular listeners of the show know that Jerome Kern, the composer we're going to hear, was not religious. We don't know the religious views of Fats Waller. He wrote, a lot
Ain't
of great
misbehaving,
songs.
So Ain't many mis- wonderful songs.
Yeah. But we do know that Fats Waller refused to go into the ministry at the urging of his father, who was a Baptist minister. Instead of religion, Fats Waller chose a career in jazz.
And we're all fortunate he did. This week on FFRF's Ask an Atheist, we didn't take any questions. We watched a video of professor and author Chris Cameron talking about black freethinkers that was delivered at our conference last year.
And you can watch that Ask an Atheist show. It airs every Wednesday. But you can watch it forever on FFRF's YouTube channel by looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist. You can also tune in to the live show next week at 12 noon Central on FFRF's Facebook page, where you can ask questions during the show.
So, we have so much news to get into, and some of it's local. The so-called very Reverend Richard M. Heilman, who's a priest of St. Mary of Pine Bluff here in Dane County, has been making some very controversial remarks. His patriarchal and militaristic sermons are getting more and more political, to the point where his parish officials are telling him to, can it. He compares Democrats to Nazis, decries liberalism, and defends the January 6th insurrectionists. He thinks evil is roaming the earth. And here's what he said on a recent Roman Catholic podcast.
But what we're dealing with, we're talking about influencers. And right now, the diabolical is the influencers, Hollywood, media, TV, big tech, universities. They're all influencing us in this communist direction, but I call it even an anti-God direction. We're going to do the opposite of what God wants us to do. The reason for that mostly is pride. That comes from the Garden of Eden. This is what we're dealing with right now, and literally, the diabolical is everywhere right now.
He is a grown man in the 21st century who still believes in devils and demons and angels and powers. We don't believe in the devil, but it seems like something is infecting people's minds these days.
And I want to make it clear that he's raising money for the defense of January 6th insurrectionists, and he downplayed the insurrection by comparing it to the demonstrations here at the Madison Capitol many years ago against Act 10, which was against teachers being able to unionize. And that was entirely peaceful. People flooded the Capitol. It was open.
We were there.
We were there, and it wasn't barricaded, and there weren't police saying don't go in, and et cetera, et cetera. And so this is such an insult.
So talking about other clergy around the country who are basically violating their IRS agreement not to politic from the pulpit, FFRF is encouraging the IRS to investigate five Ohio churches that have been blatantly campaigning for an Ohio senatorial candidate. That's Josh Mandel. There's a church, Northwest Baptist Church in Toledo, for example, is one of those churches. He's a Republican. And during the church service, I watched that whole service. The whole platform was a big political background of Josh Mandel. We'll listen to how the pastor introduced him.
And let's welcome the next senator of the state of Ohio, Josh Mandel.
And you can hear they're playing the Rocky.
He's a candidate. He's not the senator. So this is endorsement.
Yeah, for a candidate. And so he gave basically a political speech about abortion and about going after liberals and Democrats by name. And then Josh Mandel, well, listen to what Josh said when he came up to the stage.
Thank you, Pastor. Thanks for opening up your house of worship. I really appreciate you doing this. We've had so many Baptist pastors throughout the state who've been welcoming us.
So we've written a formal letter of complaint to the IRS asking them to investigate this.
And this includes Victory Christian Church in Kettering. It includes a church called Solid Rock Church in Lebanon, Ohio, which has been holding political rallies. And the Calvary Baptist Church in Portsmouth and Ascent Church in Westlake, Ohio. So we're asking the IRS to investigate this violation of state church separation. And then over in Arizona, there's another church in Mesa, Arizona. It's the Redeemer Apostolic Church. It's been involved in blatant electioneering. In fact, the pastor said, and it was online, and I tried to grab it, but it was taken down. But the pastor basically said to the IRS, come after me. He said, I'm going to look at the IRS right in the face. My name is Joshua Feierstein, and tonight, I officially endorse Jerome Davison for Congress of the United States of America. And let me say to the IRS, come at me, bro, the pulpit.
We told them, come at him.
Yep.
Because that's public subsidy of tax-exempt donations that should not be used for politicking, because your donation for a political candidate is not tax-deductible. I mean, this is pretty simple. So we will be talking a lot in future shows, I'm sure, about the Coach Kennedy case by the Supreme Court. And we're mopping up on that because there's going to be a lot of people, the school districts, trying to take advantage of this decision and misconstruing it. And right away, we have seen that school board that we had to sue successfully and won and got many attorney's fees from, Chino Valley Unified School Board, saying that they want to reintroduce prayer back into the school board meetings after FFRF and 20-some plaintiffs won a lawsuit that they cannot open with prayer. It went all the way up to the Ninth Circuit. This is not what the Bremerton Coach Kennedy case was about at all. So we have written a very firm letter to them, reminding them of the law, reminding them of the court ruling, and this is probably just going to be a very common pastime for our attorneys.
They might be thinking, well, the Supreme Court now is on our side. They're going to be lenient with us. We can go ahead and get away with it.
Well, they're all going to be thinking that. We're going to be seeing more suits. But in this one, this is a complete victory. What else is going on, Dan?
Well, so the RFF attorneys have been very busy writing letters of complaint. And here's a couple of complaints and a victory. We are asking an Indiana sheriff's department to stop organizing baptismals and having religious services for the inmates in the Decatur County, Indiana prison system. Sheriff Dave Durant is coordinating a Residents Encounter Christ weekend. He did it in 2019. He did it again in 2021. And they actually have baptismals, and they preach to them, and they think that this is going to increase their ability to
rehabilitate, which is phony. But there are photographs up at our website where we have the press release, and I would urge you to go
I'm
and look at them.
Some,
it's outrageous. It's shocking.
It's just like this kind of weird little tin thing with water in it, just barely enough for a person to get into. And there's the pastor baptizing inmates within there.
And they have a bunch of churches coming in. Yeah. So we will hope to prevail soon on that.
This
and then what's
real,
the victory?
Real misuse. Then over in Illinois, there's a school district that was allowing proselytizers and preachers to come in, especially a former NFL player whose name is Ray McElroy. He's now a pastor. He was invited to speak to the students at Richards High School in Oaklawn, Illinois, and distributing his book, How to Find God. Basically, his talk at the high school was a Christian sermon. So we have contacted the school district to say this is crossing the line. There's freedom of religion in this country, but in the public schools, you cannot preach to captive school students.
And they agreed.
And they agreed. And so
good for them. Now, this is such a chronic issue for FFRF. We are very pleased to announce that the Freedom From Religion Foundation and the Women's Leadership Project have awarded the Lorraine Hansberry Scholarships this year. And this is a fund for high school seniors, and they were doing humanist things, and they got a lot of educational programming and training. And six students with humanist orientation were chosen for the awards, and FFRF was pleased to pay for half of these awards. The students got either $500 or $1,000. They're all going on to college, and it does memorialize Lorraine Hansberry, who was a free-thinking playwright, a wonderful playwright who wrote Raisin in the Sun, and it was the first black drama by a black woman produced on Broadway, and she was also a freethinker. So we're very appreciative to be working with Sikibu Hutchinson and Black Skeptics Los Angeles also with them about this. And now, in the time remaining in this segment, I just want to briefly talk about a blog that I did about this issue of seeking the death penalty for women who have abortions, or allowing women with life-threatening pregnancies to die, or allowing women who have miscarriages to die, which is the consequence of overturning Roe versus Wade. And I start with a favorite few lines of William Butler Yeats, a famous poem called Slouching Toward Jerusalem. And I turn that into Slouching Toward Theocracy. And he starts that poem saying, things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. And we are seeing things fall apart in our nation. We are seeing that the center does not hold. And this is a crisis situation with the Supreme Court. And we are seeing many anti-abortionists and anti-abortion public officials who are largely Christian nationalists now saying that there should be no exception if a woman would die if her pregnancy continues. We are seeing, there was a news article today in the New York Times about how confused physicians are that they would normally perform a life-saving abortion on women coming in with pregnancies that are non-viable, who are starting to miscarry or have stillbirths. Their water has broken and the fetus doesn't expel, and then they're at risk for a terrible infection. And they're sending them home and saying, you can't come back until you're really, really sick, like you're going to end up in the ICU. And then we are seeing a call by many anti-abortionists and some state politicians for the death penalty for a woman who has an abortion. So things are getting very grim on abortion rights in the United States. And this does show the danger of religion ever being invoked in any of our civil laws, especially for women or pregnant persons. And so we're eyeing this. We also were delighted to see an article in the Washington Post that corrects the record from Justice Alito, who said that there was never a right to abortion in our country. And this is records showing that the daughter of Thomas Jefferson, Martha Jefferson Randolph, actually gave an abortion, abortifacient herb to her cousin, who was a victim of her brother-in-law at 18. And she expelled the fetus, and they put the man on trial, but nothing, and he got out. But Martha Jefferson Randolph and her cousin were never tried for the abortion.
So there was no outrage against that at that
time.
Nope,
there was sympathy for her. So that shows up Alito, and that record is very clear.
I thought the Yeats poem was slouching towards Bethlehem.
Slouching towards Bethlehem.
Yeah, not Jerusalem.
And you're right.
So we're going to take a break here, and after the break, we're going to get a sneak preview of a brand new song that's going to be officially publicly debuted at our convention in October with the Godless Gospel Singers. And then after that, the athlete and the wellness author Don Ardell will tell us how to achieve freedom from religion in 30 days. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
We're going to listen to Godless Gospel, so you don't want to miss that.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
We have our upcoming 45th Annual National Convention of the Freedom From Religion Foundation the last weekend in October, actually starting all day Friday and Saturday, October 28th and 29th, and concluding with a business meeting for members on the 30th in San Antonio. And we have John Irving, we have Jim Hightower, we have activists, we have authors, Julia Sweeney, and student activists and so on, but we're also going to have the debut of something very special.
It's called Godless Gospel, a group of former gospel singers and producers who are now non-religious. We've been working on this project for a long time, and for a sneak preview of what you're going to hear at our convention in October, we have produced a demo of many of the songs. We're going to listen right now to a demo of the song, Life is Good. Tahira Clayton sings the solo. Andre Forbes directs it. And the distinguished singers include Candace Gorham, Rogers Phoebe, Cynthia McDonald, D'Angela Morant, and Mandisa Thomas.
Back on track, and I can tell you, life waiting a long time to get a gospel choir to sing your song. Life is good, Dan. Of course, that's just the demo. And we're looking for more singers who sing gospel. So there, you go to the, what, gospel?
Godlessgospel.org.
If you want to send an audition tape.
We're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to hear from Donald Ardell about freedom from religion in 30 days.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker. Don Ardell has won 7 age group World Triathlon Championships and a dozen titles in U.S. Triathlon and Duathlon Nationals. He has 2 patents for a hands-free fast transition running shoe that speeds the switch during triathlons from the bike to the run. He's written many books. The first of his 15 books in 1977 is called High Level Wellness, An Alternative to Doctors, Drugs, and Disease. And I understand that that really helped to spark the wellness movement in the world. Another book of his is called Planning for Wellness, A Guidebook for Achieving Optimal Health. A book called The Book of Wellness, A Secular Approach to Spirituality, Meaning, and Purpose. A book that came out in 2019 called Not Dead Yet, World Triathlon Champion 75 and Over, Offer Tips for Successful Aging. That was with the co-author Jack Welber.
And I believe we interviewed you at the time that came out, Don. And Don Ardell's newest book is called Freedom from Religion in 30 Days, A Real Wellness Approach to Critical Thinking, Exuberance, and Personal Freedoms. Just came out. It's a beautiful book. And welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Don.
Delight to be here again.
It's nice to have someone in studio for a change now.
Yes, I'm right around the corner.
You didn't have to walk far to come here.
Not at all.
And you didn't have to walk far to the U.S. Capitol or the Wisconsin Capitol earlier this week when I saw a video of you doing how many push-ups to celebrate your 84th birthday?
84.
I thought you did 85.
I did 85, but...
One to grow on.
It's hard to count at my age.
Your wife sent us the video, or you sent the video of you out there, 85 push-ups on your 84th birthday. And in the video you said, "I hope I don't live too much longer."
That was ad lib. I was really tired.
So 84 and you're doing push-ups and staying healthy. So what's your secret?
No secrets. No secrets. It's all in Not Dead Yet.
In the book, Not Dead Yet.
Yeah, it's all about thriving and flourishing. You know, as Ingersoll said, circumstances furnish the seeds of good and evil, but they also have a great deal to do with the quality of your life. It's not all about personal heroics and choosing to live in a way that's really difficult and disciplined. It's your environment, your cultures, the kind of relationships you have, your opportunities, and most of all, just fate that turns in your direction.
But you are committed to this. I mean, you're making an effort.
I am. It turned out that way, but it's not because of personal virtue so much. In fact, my career was a transition from psychology to urban planning to health planning, and then in the early 70s into wellness, and shortly thereafter real wellness. The book came out and everything was different, and if any one of those links hadn't happened, I wouldn't be here.
You must have a bunch of medals in your house, right? From winning these.
Give them away to little kids at races.
Really?
They love it. Yeah, the kids walk the races or whatever. You go over to them and tell you, you're going to be a champion. I watched you. You're wonderful. Huh. And the kid, it's wonderful.
Wow, that's great.
That's a good way to use medals. Otherwise, they're just junk.
That's a good idea. Little kids do love other people's trophies.
No, they become their trophies. Someone came up and recognized the talent they have.
Wow.
So, where do we start? Do we want to just talk about high-level wellness? Or?
Not at all. No. I'd rather talk about what inspired me to write this particular book.
The new book is called Freedom from Religion in
30 Days. Well, I was inspired, first of all, but in so many ways. Like JFK, I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute. And like Ron Reagan Jr., I'm an unabashed atheist who is alarmed by the intrusion of religion into our secular government. And like my hero, Robert Greene Ingersoll, I'm appalled by the adverse consequences of religious dogmas and creeds on people's behavior who are too serious about ancient Iron Age traditions and beliefs that are reinforced today and have led us into a situation where our democracy is in peril due to white Christian nationalism and other related factors, with people that are close to being in that category who are in high places.
So how does freedom from religion connect to health and wellness? How does that connect?
I'm glad you ask. All 30 days are an expression of all the work I've been doing for the past 50 years. That is to say, everything about the book, Freedom from Religion, is associated with real wellness, which is a philosophy and a lifestyle that people can choose based on certain principles having to do with reason, critical thinking, exuberance, meaning and purpose in life, joy and contributions to the community, and personal freedoms or liberty. And the acronym Real Wellness stands for those qualities, and in the middle is A for athleticism, which is it's not covered in the book, but the other three are. In fact, this book contains four self-evaluations or assessments wherein people can take a 10-item questionnaire, true or false, or yes or no, and on a gradient scale, and they add up their score, and there is a detailed analysis of where they stand in relation to real wellness and where they might want, what
so
they
it's
want.
It's a 30-day program, then, that you take.
It's a 30-day program. These occur within the 10th day, the 20th day, and the 30th, final day. And in the middle somewhere is another one that's called self-awareness of stress and your ability to manage and use your stress for positive energies.
Well, and there is a lot of stress right now in our lives.
Uh-huh. Some people are better at managing it than others, and it's a skill.
So you said real, R-E-A-L. Yeah. What do those letters stand for?
Reason, exuberance, athleticism, and liberty. Liberty isn't about the country, whether the country gives you liberty. It's rather the personal freedoms that you can create that are not forbidden, but are oftentimes, again, because of religious dogmas and creeds and the behaviors of leaders, are inhibited, but you don't have to stay that way. And those are identified in most of the days.
So do you think religion gets in the way, or religion can inhibit wellness?
Wow, my response to that is going to be an understatement. I believe that religion is someone else said it, Larry Kalzikowski or some, I'm sorry about ruining his name, but in the last Free Thought Today newsletter, there was an article by this Larry guy, who I practice his name, but I forgot it now, who suggested that religion is a mental disorder and that it seriously, adversely affects people's functioning in life. And that it's also contagious in the sense through indoctrinations, and it really gets in the way not only of personal behaviors and people's happiness and joy and ability to do well in the real wellness areas, but it also has hazardous consequences for the kind of freedoms that are so essential in our democracy.
This is so fascinating because when Dan and I were driving into work today, we couldn't walk in today together, but that's exactly what we were talking about. Dan was saying there's something wrong with these people's minds. Mm-hmm. You know, this local priest that thinks believes in devils and diabolicalism.
Can you believe it? Exorcisms.
Yeah.
Which always boggled my mind.
But there are a lot of healthy Christians. I mean, it's not like being a believer is going to make you unhealthy.
Not per se, but being a believer, especially if you're a fundamentalist or if you feel that you have to control other people's behavior, such as we see with the loss of reproductive rights and all kinds of other hazards to people who are trying to live their own lives by people who want others to think the way they do and follow their rules for what consists of virtues and ethics. My own observations and readings and experiences suggest that religion sufferers are more likely to be intolerant and tribal, close-minded and overstressed, angry, and easy marks for shysters and autocrats like Donald Trump.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, when they look at states that have the highest level of fraud victims, guess what's at the top? Utah. Mormons. Suckers.
Yeah. Well, look at the religious affiliations of prison inmates. I mean, it's overwhelmingly Christian in our country. I mean, it's easy to get rid of your sins. Just
if you can
show
be,
up
yeah, just,
and say, I'm sorry.
Yeah, ask somebody to bless you or forgive you.
I remember Father McGovern, we always used to go to one priest. I was raised Catholic. I wasn't too serious about it. I didn't know any better for the first 12 years of my life. But after that, I just became kind of unaware of it. It didn't have much effect, and I consciously chose by the time I was a college student just it's ridiculous and started developing reasons why I felt that way or sensed that way. But
So I think you have a point there, because I remember as a believer and as a Christian minister, this whole assessment, this whole idea of human nature, that I had this idea that there was something wrong with me. I was depraved. Mm. I was a sinner.
You were told you were a sinner.
I know I was told that, but I actually kind of felt that. I kind of felt like I'm not living up.
Well, why would you feel that way? That's reinforced constantly in the religion. My parents used to listen to Billy Graham and every other word from this screaming
mouth
was you're going to hellfire and all these crazy stuff. And then George Beverly Shea would come on with a beautiful song and everybody would get teary and go up and to the stage and sign up for
Just As I Am.
There it is,
without
Just As I Am.
One plea.
That's a powerful song.
Yeah.
I might have gone up myself if I had been there.
Quite a bit
but
of theater
today.
There, huh? Well, we are talking about a new book called Freedom from Religion in 30 Days with wellness expert and FFRF member Donald Ardell, and it's a guide to critical thinking, exuberance, and personal freedoms. And when we come back, Don, well, we'll talk about anything you want to talk about, but I'd like to talk a little bit more about your remark that stress is something that you can learn to handle.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom from Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, and we're continuing our conversation with Don Ardell, the athlete, the champion, and the author of many books. We're talking about his newest book, just came out, called Freedom from Religion in 30 Days, A Real Wellness Approach to Critical Thinking, Exuberance, and Personal Freedoms.
So, Don, freedom from religion in 30 days? How do we do that?
Well, you get a good start with 30 days, and you review all the many topics that are critical to personal well-being and the philosophy of real wellness. I can't highlight all the 30 days, of course, but I can mention a few of my favorites, starting with the idea that there are three major self-evaluations that enable people to find out where they are on the scale, the spectrum of doing well or needing some attention given to any one of these key areas like reason, exuberance, and personal liberties. And also there's a stress assessment, which is also important because stress is something that everyone has to deal with, but our skills are very different and it's possible to get much better. But anyway, among my favorites, of course, the first one I'd mention is Day 13, which is all about my hero, Robert Greene Ingersoll, the great orator and lawyer and friend of presidents and so on and so forth.
Day 13, that sounds lucky.
That's just a coincidence. I didn't plan it that way. The other days focus on the case for leaving the Catholic Church under conditions that I express. Developing some mastery of the art of doubting. I make a case for the day of reason, and I go after the day of prayer on another day. These are different days I'm mentioning. I think we ought to reorganize our holiday, focusing on winter solstice and blending that with Christmas. I, of course, have a lot of attention given to Christian nationalism. And by the way, this isn't all about religion. I don't ignore politics and sex either, because these are three areas that most people don't want to talk about, so I give them a lot of attention. Ethics and religion are evaluated, and I give many examples. And by the way, there are over 100 luminaries who are addressed or quoted or represented that were critical, and they're credited in the book. There's also a whole day on play. Not that it has a direct connection to religion, although maybe people who are uptight and angry don't play as much as they ought to, but the powerful effect that play has on stress, among other factors.
Like pickleball, maybe?
Pickleball is a good one, yes.
Does gardening count as play? it's hard work, but it's play.
Yes, well, of course. Try playing pickleball singles sometimes.
Well, I understand you're getting pretty good at it. So.
Yeah, I'm developing it. I played a lot of handball in my 30s, and that, I can use my left hand, so I hit with both the arms. Anyway, exuberant skepticism. I make the case that life is meaningless and that that's a wonderful thing because it means we're not tied to elements or beliefs that would...
Outside of ourselves.
Make us less likely to seize the day and make the most of our limited time here on Earth.
Make your own meaning.
Exactly, make your own meanings. I have a day on nothing is sacred, another day on superstition and magical thinking, one on guiding children to be better at critical thinking as well as the other real wellness dimensions.
Now, I would differ with you that I think sleep is sacred.
Oh, sleep is pretty important. Yeah, there's no question about that.
Annie Laurie has a great talent for sleeping
another reason
on Sunday
to have,
mornings.
Yeah, another reason to be honest and have a good conscience. And the last one I'll mention is that I have a lot of fun making the case that Satanic Temple is a lot more ethical, in my view, much more positive than is Catholic Church and many other religions.
So the Satanic Temple, they don't actually believe in a real Satan.
Of course not.
That's just the name.
They're like the American Humanist Association and having all kinds of qualities that they advance as part of the fun they have with Baalzebub or one, not Baalzebub, Bahomet.
Yes.
And of course, Lucifer, the light bearer, that used to be a famous free thought journal in the 19th century.
Have you seen the movie Hail Satan?
Yeah, I saw that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's terrific.
We're talking about that whole temple.
Oh, delightful. So anyway, that's the highlight of the 30 days.
So
let's go back to stress.
Yes.
So you said stress is that you can learn. It's an art form or a skill that you can learn to deal with stress. So give us some examples.
Well, first of all, it's stress itself, which could be both positive or negative, is really not the issue so much as how you deal with it. And that's something that you can learn, like any other skill taught in schools. That is, you can have a number of traits. Sam Harris has an entire podcast, a huge audience that is focused basically on stress management that deals with meditation.
And mindfulness.
Mindfulness. Yeah. And he's got a new series now. I listened to the first one, which is just wonderful, in which the first speaker in the Life series is talking about our finitude and that real stress management isn't just saving time and doing a lot of busy work stuff, but in recognizing that we have very little time here, 4,000 weeks to be sure.
That'll be your next book, 4,000 weeks.
Well, I couldn't do that because I've had my 4,000 weeks already. I'm 400 over that. So I have to be modest. I'm thinking more in terms of days and minutes.
Yeah, but you're looking pretty healthy there, pretty spry. So.
Yeah, well, I do 500 push-ups most mornings, and that helps.
Don't you think that with stress management, that a big part of it is just oxygen, taking deep breaths to
yes.
relax the brain so
yes.
that – because lack of oxygen can increase stress to the brain.
Yes.
And don't a lot of these, like, yoga and meditation things, don't they pretty much focus on breathing?
Being physically fit is a critical area.
Yeah.
And not taking yourself so seriously is pretty important. Recognizing that there are going to be ups and downs and trying to level out and be a bit more stoic or calm.
Well, here's a little palindrome. The word stressed, spelled backwards, is dessert.
Well, there's a that should do it.
Yeah.
If you hadn't had any doubt before this, let that be a lesson to go learn all you can about stress. It's not that complicated.
We have about 1 minute left. Some people think that the word wellness and the wellness movement has more to do with alternative medicine
yes.
than the lifestyle.
Yes.
How do you talk about that?
Oh, my goodness. I've written extensively about the damage that has been done to the word wellness. So that's why I don't use it anymore, actually, by itself, because it doesn't
yeah.
stand alone.
So real wellness.
Real wellness moves it away from that. I mean, if there's anything that's in opposition to pseudoscience and to New Age craziness and just irrational thinking, it's real wellness, which starts out with reason and critical thinking, respect for science and evidentiary basis for your decisions. And not to mention developing personal freedoms and focusing on having an exuberant existence.
So it is not anti-medicine.
Oh, no, not at all.
Well, thanks, Don Ardell, for being with us today. It's
yeah,
always a pleasure.
It's been a great pleasure to have you in the studio again.
With an exuberant interview.
Yes, that it has been.
Yeah. His book is called Freedom from Religion in 30 days.
It's available on Amazon.com in varied formats.
And maybe pretty soon in FFRF's bookstore as well.
That would be nice.
Our
yes.
online shop.
Good.
Well, thank you for being here.
A pleasure.
And we also want to thank listeners to Free Thought Radio, listeners in Philadelphia and New Jersey to WOOM, listeners in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania to WZML, in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU, to WADR Community Radio in Janesville, Wisconsin, to KEOS in College Station, Texas, and KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, to KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, WOOL Black Sheep Radio in Bellows Falls, Vermont, WRIU in Kingston, Rhode Island, WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York. And if you're listening to us on the podcast, in which you will often hear Don Ardell's testimonial to the show, give us a thumbs up on your podcast provider and tell your friends and family to learn more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
And we can also point out that the new monthly podcast, We Dissent, featuring female attorneys who work for separation of church and state, including our own Rebecca Markert and Liz Gavel, has dropped their broadcast for the month on the abortion decision in Roe v. Wade that came out on Wednesday, and you can get that at all podcast places. And we invite you to de-stress your life by becoming an active member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, knowing that you work toward the separation of church and state, toward reason, and for the secular constitution to prevail. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.
And now we're going to have a little bonus in the second hour. We're going to play some clips from today's Democracy Now! Concerning the January 6th committee hearings that were held last night.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're continuing our coverage of Thursday's hearing of the U.S. Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. The hearing featured two White House aides who quit January 6th, former Deputy National Security Advisor Matthew Pottinger, as well as former White House Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Matthews. This is committee member Democrat Elaine Luria.
Although President Trump was aware of the ongoing riot, he did not take any immediate action to address the lawlessness. Instead, at 2:03, he called Rudy Giuliani again, and that call lasted for over 8 minutes. Moments later at 2:13, rioters broke into the Capitol itself. One of the Proud Boys charged with seditious conspiracy, Dominic Pozzola, used an officer's shield to smash a window, and rioters flooded into the building. As rioters were entering the building, the Secret Service held Vice President Pence in his office right off the Senate chamber for 13 minutes as they worked to clear a safe path to a secure location. Now listen to some of that radio traffic and see what they were seeing as the protesters got just feet away from where the Vice President was holding.
Hold! Hold! They can't keep the building! Hold!
Are that door up? If we're moving, we need to move now.
Copy.
If we lose any more time, we may lose the ability to leave. So if we're going to leave, we need to do it now.
They've gained access to the second floor, and I've got public about 5 feet from me down here below.
Okay, copy. They are on the second floor, moving in now. We may want to consider getting out and leaving now. Copy.
Will we encounter the people once we make our way?
Repeat.
Counter any individuals if we made our way to the.
There's six officers between us and the people that are 5 to 10 feet away from me.
Stand by. I'm going down to evaluate.
Go ahead.
We have a clear shot if we move quickly. We got smoke downstairs set by unknown smoke set downstairs by the protesters.
Is that route compromised?
We have this insecure. However, we will bypass some protesters that are being contained. There is smoke, unknown what kind of smoke it is. Copy.
Clear. We're coming out now. All right. Make a way.
The President's National Security Council staff was listening to these developments and tracking them in real time. On the screen, you can see excerpts from the chat logs among the President's National Security Council staff. At 2:13, the staff learned that the rioters were kicking in the windows at the Capitol. 3 minutes later, the staff said the vice president was being pulled, which meant agents evacuated him from the Senate floor. At 2:24, the staff noted that the Secret Service agents at the Capitol did not, quote, sound good right now. Earlier, you heard from a security professional who had been working in the White House complex on January 6th with access to relevant information and a responsibility to report to national security officials. We asked this person, what was meant by the comment that the Secret Service agents did not, quote, sound good right now? In the following clip of that testimony, which has been modified to protect the individual's identity, the professional discusses what they heard from listening to the incoming radio traffic that day.
Okay. That last entry in the speech of service, the Capitol does not sound good right now.
Correct.
What does that mean?
The members of the VP detail at this time were starting to fear for their own lives. There was a lot of yelling, a lot of very personal calls over the radio. So it was disturbing. I don't like talking about it, but there were calls to say goodbye to family members, so on and so forth. It was getting, for whatever the reason was on the ground, the VP detail thought that this was about to get very ugly.
And did you hear that over the radio?
Okay.
What was the response by the agents, Secret Service agents who were there?
Everybody kept saying, you know, at that point it was just reassurances or I think there were discussions of reinforcements coming, but again, it was just chaos. They were just yelling.
And obviously you conveyed this so disturbing, but what prompted you to put it into an entry? As it states there, service to the county.
They're running out of options, and they're getting nervous. It sounds like we came very close to either service having to use legal options or worse. Like I, at that point, I don't know. Is the VP compromised? Is the detail kind of like I don't know. Like we didn't have visibility, but it doesn't. If they're screaming and saying things like say goodbye to the family, like the floor needs to know this is going to on a whole nother level soon.
As this next video shows, the rioters' anger was focused primarily on Vice President Mike Pence.
This woman comes up to the side of us and she says, Pence folded. So it was kind of like, okay, well, in my mind, I was thinking, well, that's it, you know. Well, my son-in-law looks at me and he says, I want to go in.
What percentage of the crowd is going to the Capitol?
100%. It is spread like wildfire that Pence has betrayed us and everybody is marching on the Capitol, all million of us. It's insane.
People appear angry as you were walking to the Capitol?
Yeah, a lot of people seem like they're very upset.
Tell us some of the things they were saying, if you recall.
Oh, they were saying all, you know, people were screaming all types of stuff. They're mad that Vice President Pence was going to accept the electorals. I mean, it was a little, if you could think it up, you were hearing it.
I believe that Vice President Pence was going to certify the electoral votes and or not certify them, but I guess that's just changed, correct? And it's a very big disappointment. I think there's several hundred thousand people here that are very disappointed.
President Trump did not try to calm his thousands of disappointed supporters. Instead, at almost the same moment violence was getting completely out of hand, Donald Trump sent his 2:24 tweet. The president said, Mike Pence didn't have the courage to do what should have been done to protect our country and our Constitution. Despite knowing the Capitol had been breached and the mob was in the building, President Trump called Mike Pence a coward and placed all the blame on him for not stopping the certification. He put a target on his own vice president's back. Mr. Pottinger and Ms. Matthews, when we ask you about your reaction to seeing the 224 tweet in real time, you both used the same imagery to describe it. President Trump was adding fuel to the fire. Mr. Pottinger, you made the decision to resign after seeing this tweet. Can you please tell us why?
Yes. So that was pretty soon after shortly before I'd gotten back to the White House. I'd come from off-site. I began to see for the first time those images on TV of the chaos that was unfolding at the Capitol. One of my aides handed me a sheet of paper that contained the tweet that you just read. I read it and was quite disturbed by it. I was disturbed and worried to see that the president was attacking Vice President Pence for doing his constitutional duty. So the tweet looked to me like the opposite of what we really needed at that moment, which was a de-escalation. That's why I had said earlier that it looked like fuel being poured on the fire. So that was the moment that I decided that I was going to resign, that would be my last day at the White House. I simply didn't want to be associated with the events that were unfolding on the Capitol.
Thank you. And Ms. Matthews, what was your reaction to the president's tweet about Vice President Pence?
So it was obvious that the situation at the Capitol was violent and escalating quickly. And so I thought that the tweet about the vice president was the last thing that was needed in that moment. And I remember thinking that this was going to be bad for him to tweet this because it was essentially him giving the green light to these people, telling them that what they were doing at the steps of the Capitol and entering the Capitol was okay, that they were justified in their anger. And he shouldn't have been doing that. He should have been telling these people to go home and to leave and to condemn the violence that we were seeing. And I'm someone who has worked with him. You know, I worked on the campaign, traveled all around the country, going to countless rallies with him, and I've seen the impact that his words have on his supporters. They truly latch on to every word and every tweet that he says. And so I think that in that moment, for him to tweet out the message about Mike Pence, it was him pouring gasoline on the fire and making it much worse.
As you will see, at 2:26, the vice president had to be evacuated to safety a second time and came within 40 feet of the rioters. The attack escalated quickly right after the tweet. During this chaos, what did President Trump do at that point? He went back to calling senators to try to further delay the electoral count. While the vice president was being evacuated from the Senate, President Trump called Senator Tommy Tuberville, one of his strongest supporters in the Senate. As Senator Tuberville later recalls, he had to end the call so that he could evacuate the Senate chamber himself. Let's listen.
He called, didn't call my phone, called somebody else, and they handed it to me. And I basically told him, I said, Mr. President, we're not doing much work here right now because they just took our vice president out. And matter of fact, I'm going to have to hang up on you. I've got to leave.
Senator Josh Hawley also had to flee. Earlier that afternoon, before the joint session started, he walked across the east front of the Capitol. As you can see in this photo, he raised his fist in solidarity with the protesters already amassing at the security gates. We spoke with a Capitol police officer who was out there at the time. She told us that Senator Hawley's gesture riled up the crowd, and it bothered her greatly because he was doing it in a safe space, protected by the officers and the barriers. Later that day, Senator Hawley fled after those protesters he helped to rile up stormed the Capitol. See for yourself.
They're showing the image of Josh Hawley racing through the hallways of the Capitol.
Think about what we've seen. Undeniable violence at the Capitol. The vice president being evacuated to safety by the Secret Service. Senators running through the hallways of the Senate to get away from the mob. As the commander-in-chief, President Trump was oath and duty bound to protect the Capitol. His senior staff understood that.
Do you believe, Jared, that the president has an obligation to ensure a peaceful transfer of power?
Yes.
And do you think the president has an obligation to defend all three branches of our government?
I believe so.
And I assume you also would agree the president has a particular obligation to take care that the laws be faithfully executed.
That is one of the president's obligations, correct?
No, I mean, I asked what his duty is.
Well, I mean, there's a constitutional duty. What he has, he's the commander-in-chief. And that was that was my biggest issue with him as national security advisor.
Rather than uphold his duty to the Constitution, President Trump allowed the mob to achieve the delay that he hoped would keep him in power.
That was Democrat Elaine Lurie of the January 6th House Committee. And before her was testimony from Mike Pence's National Security Advisor, Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, and White House Counsel Pat Cipollone after Jared Kushner. During Thursday's hearing, Republican Committee member Adam Kinzinger detailed how President Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, received numerous text messages on the afternoon of January 6th from people urging Trump to stop the attack on the Capitol.
Throughout the attack, Mr. Meadows received texts from Republican members of Congress, from current and former Trump administration officials, from media personalities, and from friends. Like President Trump's staff, they knew President Trump had to speak publicly to get the mob to stop. Let's look at just a few of these text messages. Fox News personality Laura Ingraham said, "The president needs to tell the people in the Capitol to go home." Former Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney urged, "Mark, he needs to stop this now." Fox News personality Brian Kilmeade said, "Please get him on TV, destroying everything that you guys have accomplished." When we interviewed White House counsel Pat Cipollone, he told us that he knew the president's two tweets were not enough. Let's listen to what he said.
I think the question is, did you believe that the tweets were not anything about your advice to the president?
No, I believe more needed to be done. I believed that a public statement needed to be made.
When you talk about others on the staff thinking more should be done or thinking that the president needed to tell people to go home, who would you put in that category?
Well, I would put Pat Philbin, Eric Hirschman, overall Mark Meadows, Ivanka, once Jared got there, Jared, General Kellogg, I'm probably missing some, but it was Kaylee, I think, was there, but I don't, Dan Scavino.
And who on the staff did not want people to leave the Capitol?
On the staff?
In the White House, how about?
I can't think of anybody, you know, on that day who didn't want people to get out of the Capitol once the, you know, particularly once the violence started. No, I mean,
what about the president?
Yeah.
She said the staff. So I answered.
No, I said in the White House.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought you said who else on the staff. I can't reveal communications, but obviously I think, you know, yeah.
Let's pause on that last statement. Although Pat Cipollone is being careful about executive privilege, there really is no ambiguity about what he said. Almost everybody wanted President Trump to instruct the mob to disperse. President Trump refused.